You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're delighted that you're joining us. If you're here live and you're watching on Facebook or you're listening to the audio, or maybe you're joining us sometime down the line, all of our shows all the way back to August 4th, 2022, show number one, are now available on all your favorite streaming platforms. And if you want to rehear tonight, just look for episode 65.
65.
Yeah, number 65. And we're just so happy to have you with us. That was the Hot Texas Swing Band getting us started with a little bit of their song, Hot Texas. Jim.
Special guest tonight, right?
Who's our special guest
tonight? Erin Pringle.
And here she
Hello.
Is.
Hi.
Hi.
It's good to see you.
It's so good to see you. We're so happy to have you with us.
We're going to talk about your special book tonight.
Yes, we are. And I'm going to do my best to get it in the camera. Here we go. So we're talking about Unexpected Weather Events, a collection of stories by our guest, Erin Pringle. And we're delighted to have her with us.
We are.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Do you want to tell us a little something about Erin?
Yeah, we have a little bio here. We're going to read this thing right now. Our featured author tonight is Erin Pringle. Erin is the author of four books, the novel Izada, I Miss You, and three story collections, The Floating Order, The Whole World at Once, and the title we're talking about tonight, Unexpected Weather Events. Originally from a small town in Illinois, she now lives in Washington State with her partner, Heather, and son, Henry. By day, she works as a Montessori preschool teacher, writes when possible, has two ridiculous dogs, and two serious cats. For fun, she participates in triathlons and running races. Please welcome Erin Pringle.
Yep, that's me. Yeah, that's the right bio. Good. It all
yeah.
Matches up.
Well, you want to ask? Yeah, I have to ask a question. Yeah. We expect to see any of these dogs or cats run across the screen here. Are you got
No, I'm at my best friend's house, so there is absolutely no chance. You know, otherwise things will have already fallen down. It's a very Lucille Ball situation. So funny. I just preempted
so
it.
What are the names of the two ridiculous dogs?
Morris and Dean. Morris.
Okay. Dean. And the serious cats?
Miss Johnny Cat and Lurch.
Lurch.
How fun. Well, Erin, as we've been saying, it's delightful to have you with us. For some of our listeners and watchers may not know that you were a guest twice on the previous radio show hosted on LA Talk Radio, The Writer's Block, with host Jim Christina. And Jim was just, well, we both were huge fans of yours, and he certainly really enjoyed author-to-author talking with you. And so when you reached out and let us know that you had a new collection, we just couldn't wait to get you on. So thank you for being with us.
Oh, yeah, the same. I've always enjoyed talking to you. So definitely keep you on my list.
What's Bobby doing? Well,
I want to ask one backup question here. Triathlons, are you still competing?
Once it's warm again, I will be.
Okay.
Yeah. because all of the ones that I do are in the lake. And so
Okay, yeah. It's cold.
Too cold.
Our niece's husband is competes in triathlon events, so we're kind of familiar with him a little bit. It sounds like to me, you know, I heard that. You just said it was great fun. I think sometimes I think about running, swimming, biking. This could be torture for me.
Yeah, not for you, honey. Not for you. So, Aaron, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit, you know, more than what the bio told us. Sure. And then also do include a little bit about writing and maybe how long have you just been writing always? Tell us a little bit about it, your writing background.
Sure. So, let's see. I grew up in a household where I remember falling asleep to my mom writing letters on the typewriter to her mother. And they would exchange letters every week from mm-hmm. Evansville, Indiana, where my mom grew up, to Casey, Illinois, where we were living. And so I loved listening to her type. It was a very calming, wonderful sound. And I remember when I would write letters to my grandmother, I would scrawl, you know, I mean, I pretended I was writing letters, and then my mom would translate what I was saying underneath. Before I was knew how to write or read, I was sort of creating stories. And then my first award was in first grade for a story about a Christmas mouse. So I guess it turns out I was destined always to write lots of winter stories, Jim Bell.
Yeah.
Because this collection in particular takes place in the snowy winter, both kind of near Christmas and on toward Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. where it's still snowy.
Mm-hmm. 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 Unexpected weather events.
Yes.
Yes. You write both short stories and novels.
Yes.
We had the privilege of reading the last time that we chatted with you, Hazada, I Miss You, which was a novel. And oh my goodness. My Jim here hasn't had a chance to read that, but I remember that it was very, very moving, that I, as a reader, I just, your words are so literary and like poetry and not flowery, but so descriptive that you get right to the heart. You know, as a writer, how to grab our hearts and twist them and make them pulse and, you reach right in, and at first it's almost a little dismaying, because especially if you're used to reading cozy mysteries or, you know, just sort of, you know, Murder, She Wrote sort of stories or you know, lighthearted fiction or romances, and you sit down and go, oh, okay. And you start to read and it's like, oh, I have entered the reader's zone. I am going to really chew on this. I have to read that sentence again because it's so powerful. I don't want to go on to the next one. I need to get all of that one, and I have to think about it, and I have to absorb it, and I have to almost put the book, like, just think about that sentence. And so for our readers out there, you want to read Aaron's work. And she will encourage you, and she will stretch you, and she will take you into parts of your heart and your soul that you may have gotten out of touch with. And so at times it might feel a little bit uncomfortable or painful, but this is a writer you can trust, and you can go with her to those places. Which
and you don't even need to take your heart doctor.
No, and because we need to go to those places. As humans, we need to go to those places. And some of us in our lives may find ourselves in places where your characters are, and we need what you share, because we're going to process our own situation, perhaps through some guidance of yours. And I really felt that in Hazada, I miss you. And then it came back just as we read these stories. It just, you know, brought me right back. So now that I've gone on and on and on about why you want to read these books.
Let's ask a fun question.
Yeah.
I understand there's a little story behind the capturing the title for that book.
Or I miss you, Hazada.
Oh, Hazada.
Yeah.
That title came from the wall of a bathroom stall that my best friend saw it written and brought it to me and said, "I think that you can do something with this," because he's very good at knowing, like hearing the rhythm of what I would be attracted to and poetry and things. And so Hazada, I miss you. And I thought, oh yes, I will put that in my nest, you know, and try to figure out how to connect that to another thing that I was working on. And it really made a huge difference in how the story was told. And it was a game changer.
And that's part of what I think so many writers, what you all do, and songwriters and poets, is you really keep your ears open and your eyes open, don't you? You never know what little tidbit's going to come your way, or snippet of conversation is going to come your way. And you use them just brilliantly, because I think we so often we relate. You'll have a snippet of conversation, a story, and I'll go, I think that feels familiar. I think, you know, I think I either overheard that, or I think I was part of a conversation like that.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
When you were ready to write this book, was there a particular inspiration that got you started? The one with the stories, the one we're talking about tonight, Unexpected Events?
I remember, I was writing Hazada at the time, so I had finished The Whole World at Once, those stories. So then I knew any story I wrote after that would end up going into its own collection. And I remember at the time being really riveted by this image where my partner and son and I were going on vacation, I think, and we were driving across Washington, and we stayed in Ellensburg. And the hotel was one where you can see the outside of it, you know, like it's a double, but then you can see people or you can see out. And this image of this fence that was dividing the hotel from the neighborhood, but you could see the neighborhood's Christmas lights. And you could see just the kind of the tops of the houses and maybe a little bit into the backyards, like the swing sets. And it wasn't an affluent neighborhood, and it looked exactly or reminded me of the rural town that I grew up in. And so this sort of collision between my life where it was now and in this sort of like strange hotel, because it wasn't, it too was sort of, not, it was kind of falling apart, but not falling apart. There was that illusion of everything's okay, but you could tell that there had been water damage in our room, and it had sort of been pasted over, or, you know, painted over. And then at the same time that this other neighborhood, all of these lives were happening, and yet this fence was supposed to keep us separate, you know, so that the hotel wasn't in their way, and then they weren't in the, I don't know, like the off interstate beauty of a drive-in hotel. And so that image stayed with me for a long time. And I kind of tried to write a story around that, and it has still not yet panned out. But I think that idea is in all of the stories in this book, of this sort of watching other people's lives, other people watching your life from afar, and you're connected by sort of the unexpected elements that happen, or Christmas lights, or, you know, the songs that are familiar, but there's still this sort of like impossible wall that you can't quite get through, even when you're in a family in the story. Like there's these sort of devices that keep you away from each other, even if you're in the same room, whether it's memories or like your ways of thinking about each other or the life in which you live. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
there was a different working title, I believe, for unexpected weather events.
Yes. The original title was, These Snow Globes on Clearance, 75% off. And I love that title.
I would have picked up that a book with that title.
Yeah.
Like, especially if it came with one in a box set, you know?
Right. Yeah. Maybe I'll write a story that has that title so that the title gets it.
That would be good. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that image too of, you know, everything that's left over that no one knows what to do with. But but still beautiful.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question about writing short stories? I'm wondering, did you have anything on a shelf that you had to dust off that you put in the book, or did you write them all current, like in the last year or so? How did you do that?
Well, I would, all the stories except one are from 2016, 2017 forward. Okay. And, but then when it was about to be published, my last editor for a story collection had wanted a couple stories that hadn't been published yet in magazines. Mm-hmm. And so then I asked this editor, oh, by the way, all of these have been published, which used to be, you know, like one of your credentials to even get a story collection published is, other people have read these and said, oh, that's good, we'll take it. And so then she said, it would be good to have a few stories that haven't been published before. I mean, no, I don't think anyone is following my story publications across the internet.
You could be surprised.
Right. Oh, unexpected weather events. I've read all of those stories. I'm not going to buy the book. but regardless, yeah, there are three stories, and one of them is 15 years old, 10, 20, yeah, 15, 17 years old. Mm. And I had only brought it back out because it's a shorter story. My original book had very, very short stories in it. And this was from that kind of time period. And when I go to do events, I love to read at them, you know, when they're reading events, but it's hard to read the beginning of a story or the middle of a story for that's long. And so I had this shorter one. And so I found it and then I dusted it off and made it, work. And so then I said, oh yeah, that was never published because I never intended, at least anyway. So yeah, so that's in there. So when I was 26, 27. So back from before my second collection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of reading aloud, there were so many times if Jim and I were kind of in the same room that I would say, oh, and I would feel so compelled to read aloud. So many of the stories just, it's like they're demanding to be lifted off the page.
Yes.
And interpreted by whoever is reading it. And so that was actually, I shouldn't say lovely or wonderful, but to hear the words spoken gives them even more power or magnitude I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Right, absolutely.
But yeah, they just feel like they're meant to be read aloud.
Would you like to hear just a couple?
Sure. Paragraphs? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's lovely.
I'll just read the first few paragraphs of the first story, Another Cancer Story, because I think it sort of captures what we've been talking about.
Perfect.
So the title is Another Cancer Story. Before they knew of the cancer, finding a goldfinch dead in the frost was not a sign of cancer. Before their parents separated, a dead Finch's Broken Wings did not seem like the Time Frozen family album, where those in the beginning of the album would vanish from the middle, having relocated to another house's frames and albums into new configurations. The mother taking a selfie with the children standing by a hand-honed canoe, the picture taken by the father crouching from a museum floor, one of the few he thought to take. Their father rarely took photos. For the most part, he'd always left that to their mother. From taking candids to ordering the school pictures to scheduling the annual family photo. The pictures of him with the kids that do appear after the separation are more usually taken by the girlfriend at the time, and thus not in the genre of a long-lasting family. Anniversaries and vacations, family visits and recitals, birthdays, graduations, but those of an anthropologist's slideshow upon stumbling upon a people or place that has somehow existed outside of their mental sphere, which leads to a clutter and curiosity. There's a picture of the kids mussed from sleep on their father's plaid couch, staring at the TV with their bare legs lifted so their father can vacuum the rug beneath them. Here they are, the dad, the boy, the girl, faces in profile as they peer into a cabinet of donuts. This one was taken at the YMCA in the lobby outside the pool area. There the children stand at the ping pong table, their backs to the camera in towels and flip-flops, waiting for the direction the white ball in their father's hand will take.
No.
It's very good. I remember the passage.
Can just see all of that. And you can't help but think about the photo albums that we have when we had photo albums.
Right.
And so much is stored on phones and other places today. And pictures have become even more and more and more candid because you don't think about what's it going to cost to get that film developed.
Right.
You know, so you just, you know, you just take them and, and I can remember some pictures. My dad liked to just take pictures all the time. And I remember being homesick from school and laying on the couch watching, you know, I Love Lucy or something. And dad, and I'd be like, Dad, you know, what he'd be, this is important. This is family history. You this day, you know? It's like,
I thought you were going to say you were looking through the albums and all his pictures instead of like your father saying, no, this is an important moment in the mundane aspects of our lives.
Yeah,
no, that's great. Yeah.
You know, in this story, you're a little different, maybe in a couple of the other stories, but definitely a little bit different than some of the other stories I've written it by other authors. These are like the people with no names.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
Often,
what caused you to take that approach?
Well, I think it had in part to do with folk tales being so interchangeable, fairy tales, where you hear the same, you know, similar tropes throughout. And so, I mean, there's Little Red Riding Hood, but mainly she's remembered because of her red cloak, right?
Right.
And what happens to her. And she can easily be very similar to, you know, the maiden without hands, right? So even the maiden without hands doesn't have a name, or if she does, it's unimportant because what's remembered about her is how her father sacrificed her. And so she went around and could only eat fruit off trees because she couldn't use her hands. So there's that. And I'm very drawn to the vivid images of folk tales and fairy tales that help you remember. And then that dovetails into my father was an amateur photographer. And so I would go with him at twilight and watch him, you know, take pictures and frame scenes. And so my way of sort of moving through the world is framing visuals as though I'm taking photographs. And again, he would take pictures of the townspeople and we knew all of their names, but there was this really good, there's a really good essay by, I think his name's Sigmund Cracker or something. I don't know. But at the beginning of the 20th century, when photography was sort of becoming into the newspapers, it was becoming more like public property and used. And he talked about how in the photograph, because he thought that painting was much, much better, you know, a much higher form of art. And so he was talking about photography and how eventually every photo is a memory of the deaths of the people in those photos, and how our culture was so obsessed and still is. It's a really relevant essay, but so obsessed with this idea of life, everything in the present, that the photograph creates this sort of false present that people feel like they're living in. And so I think that's part of it too, that sort of anonymity of when you move through antique stores and you look through old photographs and old postcards and old paintings, and the lives of the people inside of them have sort of evaporated. And so it's however you cast your own life onto understanding those. And then the last thing is that in a small town, names are incredibly important and incredibly dangerous, in that that family with a certain name has always been this way since, you know, the past 60 years. And so it's harder for those children, even if their great grandfather did something, that memory still lives within the people, you know, teachers' memories. And so they are very easy to say, oh, well, so-and-so's just like his, you know. And so it makes it harder for a person to be someone who is not sort of cast within the sort of traditional memories of the town. And I think that it's really easy to, as people, mistake a person's name with, like, almost like this accidental separation of who you are from who they are, as though our names make us separate, even though we live in the same culture and the same time period. And so did our parents, you know, most likely. And so there's so many similarities. We're undergoing the same like tensions and politics and nightmares and similar books and all of that. And so there's so much that connects us, but I think names kind of function to suggest there's a disconnection. Whereas I don't think that there is. So, and my mom would always say things like, oh, well, so-and-so, I can't have that name. You know, I named you this because that kid, that name belonged to a kid in second grade with her, you know, in 1944, who, you know, like picked his nose. So I couldn't have named you after that. And so I think there's lots of those things that get in the way. So if I name, if there's names in a story, it's difficult for a reader, I think, to disconnect themselves from the person or from the character. Whereas the story, that if there's no names, the story can create the characters.
Yeah, the reader can, and the reader can kind of connect, can create.
It removes that kind of barrier, which can be, feel uncomfortable and intimate, since we don't usually like what you were saying.
Well, and when you were talking about with your dad, watching him frame photographs, your writing so often, even though I'm not from the film world at all, but when I understand the concept of storyboards, your writing is sometimes I'm like, oh, here's a, okay, this is, because they're also so big, your wording is so visual. But I feel like I'm kind of seeing a storyboard frame, and maybe that's partly because of your experience with, Is it perhaps
Absolutely. And I originally, well, I don't know originally, but from for until the point where I decided to be a writer when I was like 18 or 19, I was sure I was going to be a painter or a photographer, not a photographer, a painter. And I really, my goal was always, you know, like the Botticelli paintings where the skin tone looks exactly like somebody's flesh. And I wanted to be able to do that. And I came close, but not, not ever as close as I wanted in my brain. Do you
know what I mean? Yeah.
And then I wrote, started writing the stories in this creative writing class. And I realized that all you have to really do is say, you know, the boy in coveralls walked through the door. And the reader imagines everything for you. You don't have to paint anything.
Right? Yeah. We paint it.
And I remember my professor saying, you don't need to go into detail ever about a character because they're just going to imagine their own girlfriends anyway. Right? So it was really
Oh my gosh.
And then I could just start telling stories, which I'd grown up reading, you know, because that's what you do in the cornfields. And and so the way I tell story is almost like the inverse of how story is often told, where, you know, someone has an idea of like, oh, I'm going to tell a story of XYZ and there's going to be a beginning, middle, and end, and there's going to be a point of rising action. You know what I mean? And well, like the Red Riding Hood, like very clearly know that story.
Here comes the conflict.
Yeah, the conflict, right? And I don't like conflict. It makes me very uncomfortable. So so I sort of think of it as the story as though you're standing in the middle of an art gallery. And there's paintings on the walls. And so as you stand in the middle, like the middle of a carousel, and you're looking, you know, and you're turning as you look through the gallery, the paintings come together to create this sort of illusion of narrative. And so there are, you know, the feelings of beginning and middle and, you know, the arbitrary end, since, you know, death is basically the end. So I don't feel like you can end stories very realistically. I don't know. But so it's like when I'm writing, my process is I think in sort of paintings or photographs and try to figure out what is the best order that would make sense to the reader to tell the story of these images,
having
tangible
such a great time chatting. We're going to take a very short break because we would like our listeners and our watchers to see one of the places that your books are found. And so let's take a little quick look at bookshop.org, and then we're going to talk more about unexpected weather events when we come back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Under the Writer with special guest Erin Pringle and her book, Unexpected Weather Events, a collection of short stories.
So, Erin, you have called this is your word, semi-autobiographical book, a collection of terribly sad stories sprinkled with a bit of dry black humor. And book reviewer Madison Pearson, in an article we read recently, says the characters in these stories are currently in the midst of their sorrow. Every word is an arrow pulled straight from the quiver of despair. Now, readers, don't let that despair you. Because Erin is, as we've been talking about, she has such a gift for talking and writing about all of what goes on with life and death. And I've also read you kind of say, you know, I'm friends with grief. I get it. And I think for many of us, we encounter grief maybe for a first time and we don't know it. And we don't know what to expect or what we should feel. Or maybe we think we know what we should feel, but that's not what we feel.
Right.
And your body of work, I think, has allowed us to walk in the lives of your characters and live what they're feeling through them, which will only help us as people and humans be able to understand and process what you write about. I don't know if that's making sense, but that's the way that I embrace your work. So do you want to talk a little bit about some of the main themes that we find in your work that you absolutely meet head on?
Yes. I think at least in terms of semi-autobiographical, I don't know that they are that, but I do use experiences from my life that I then transform into fiction so that they can be understood. So, because a lot of times I'm not good at nonfiction at all. I'm terrible at nonfiction. So, if I were to tell a story about something true that happened, everyone would think, I just tell my nightmares. And that's the only true stories that I tell. It's like, guess what? Last night was awful. So I dreamed this and this and this. And nobody really wants to know my nightmares. So they just go into my stories a lot of the time. So, one of the things as a reader that I have always used is that I've always thought of story fiction as something to help you understand your own life and to understand other people's lives. Mm-hmm. So especially growing up in a town of 3,000 people, you hear a lot of stories of their lives that are probably not that true, you know, but it's very limited of what you're exposed to. Even the other day at preschool, we were teaching the children about figure skating. And I realized for the very first time that not everyone had grown up watching ice skating with their mom on TV in the 80s. Like we did that all the time.
The time.
And I had no idea that the other teachers had not had this exact experience and that I was walking around with a body of wisdom that I had no idea that I had, where I was explaining like the double axel and you can lose points if you don't land what you promised. And the other teachers are looking at me like, where did you learn this? You know, like, didn't you watch Paul Wiley?
Yeah. That, oh my gosh, yeah.
Paul Wiley, we remember him. Yep.
Christy Yamaguchi, I'm dropping names and they're just looking at me like, Aaron, no, we grew up in a city where there were lots of things for us to pass the time doing. So going to the library was so important because that's how I got out of the small town and also understand what was going on underneath, you know, the skulls of the people that I was around, because there were these sort of narratives about religion and how to live life that felt like maybe people had just agreed to say it, but it wasn't actually true. I couldn't tell, you know, because my dad was manic depressive and was on really heavy medication because it was the mid-80s. And my family did not represent, like, it didn't look like other people's families because he was, you know, asleep all day because they were overdosing, because of course that's what they did. Because if you're asleep, you can't be sad, right? And then my best friend at the time, her father was in a wheelchair, but we were not living middle income lives, but everyone else and on TV suggested that's how life was supposed to look. So I knew that there was some kind of disconnect, you know, and then the idea that God would be watching my thoughts at any moment. And I thought, oh no, like, I don't have the freedom to think about things. Like, oh, I can't think. How am I going to control my thoughts? You know, anyway, but reading and reading and reading and reading and reading. And so I don't even remember what your question was. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Yeah, that's why. Connected to my biography of my life. So stories have always been for me to understand other people and to understand that my thoughts are not weird, even if other kids at school thought that I was weird, you know, because I didn't fit the mold. Other stories affirmed for me that, you know, there is life outside of cornfields, that there are other people. And so I've always gone to fiction as a way not to escape my life, but to better understand it.
Better understand it.
Yes. And so when my dad died of cancer, that there wasn't, YA wasn't a big thing yet like it is now. So there weren't a lot of stories about children's parents dying of cancer. And if there were, they would have been censored because there's that whole thing about children's lit and making things not reality. So I didn't have any preparation really there. So that was a shock. And then my best friend died of pulmonary hypertension. So again, like there's not a lot out there on what happens when your best friend dies. And she says 3-year-old daughters and you're not living in the same place anymore. And then my sister died of suicide. And I'd only read when she was 45 and I was 30. And I'd only read one story that was realism about suicide or that revolved around it by Marcia Norman, Night Mother. And she had written that in 1985. I mean, she won, I think, the Pulitzer for it. But there was all the other stuff on suicide was really, really B-movie and really harmful to how I thought about how I was processing the experience of my sister, right? Because there's all these horror movies that love nooses. And it's hard to be watching a TV show and not see somebody hang themselves or their feet or somebody do this motion. And it's supposed to be really funny. And you know that the audience is laughing, but you're not, because that is not the experience. And then, you know, also that the people who wrote that had no experience with it because they would have never, ever done it like that. You know what I mean? And so, and then because of all of the narratives about, you know, from religion about people who die by suicide, go to hell, you know, so I'm here in my internal thought processes were so awful and not at all how I thought of my sister, you know, and I was not angry at her at all. I just kept thinking, what a mistake. And then I kept thinking, because she and I used to play Clue together, right? And there's a noose in Clue when you play that game. And so suddenly I kept thinking, you know, Mrs. Reardon did it with the noose in the, you know, in the observatory. But that was not a helpful image, you know? So it's just like I was inundated with false narratives about an experience I was having, such that my experience was constantly being informed by things that just made things hurt worse. And so, and then, you know, even in books, like often suicide is the way to get into a mystery. Like, oh, the person died by suicide, but actually they were murdered, you know, and it's great. Or, and then they go through like these really bad reasons of always why it happened, like as though it's easy to unravel. Life at any point to understand why someone does what they do. Do you know what I mean?
I did.
Like, and so it was hard, like part of my grieving and part of being who I am, I've always been, even though I have siblings, I was basically an only child because of the huge gap in years between myself and my siblings. And because my dad was going through his life at that time in my child, you know, in childhood, that he wasn't really there. And then he died, so he wasn't there. Writing is how I've always processed anything, is just kind of letting it reflect back to me and doing it in fiction, because then I can see it better for some reason than if I just write what's happening. It doesn't do it. So I started writing about grief itself, or like after suicide, when someone does it. And how jarring and awful that experience is, because if I had ever read something like that, it would have been so helpful to me. And it sort of creates people who have an experience that I have had that I can understand. So it's almost like creating stories I needed to hear and creating people who understand what I've been through so mm-hmm. that other people can
we'll help other
just we'll affirmation. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
It's not advice. Right. I have no advice, right?
Right, right.
But it's you know, like the difference between having a partner when you tell them their problem your problem and they say, oh, let me fix it for you.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Or the partner who says, oh, yes, that's a real feeling, you know, and how important it is just to have someone say that. Like that is you know, I don't know if it's healing, but it just tells you that you're in the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that you're not making stuff up. And this is actually true, because if you were to just look at movies and so many stories about dealing with suicide, you would think you'd gone crazy, because mm-hmm. none of those experiences are like the actual experience, mm-hmm. you know, of someone A, dying, and B, dying that way. It's a very specific grief room. You know, when my dad died of cancer, that grief room is very different than the kind of grief that I went through or and still am going through, of course, because it never ends, with my sister, you know, very different. So when I think about characters and what's important to them, and I always want to take my characters seriously, and I really don't like mean people or people who are cruel. So I pretty much never have those kinds of people, unless they're kind of gossipy. Those are like the closest I get to mean. Because everything.
I'm holding for those that aren't watching, I'm holding up the book title again, Unexpected Weather Events. There's just wonderful, wonderful stories. The one that really grabbed me, and I have now reread a couple of times, is the Valentine's Day, which covers a lot of different situations for the characters, but suicide is one of the main ones. And I felt as I read the story and as I read it again and again, that this would be a very important story for anyone who is or has lost a dear friend of a family, a child, a parent, whatever, to suicide. That if you've been having a hard time processing it, you need to read this story. And if you haven't had that experience in your life yet, you need to read this story so that you can help others who you may come across that are trying to process, or should it become a factor in your life, you have a go-to that will help you through it. And I think that, Erin, your book is full of stories that do that for all of us. And that one in particular just spoke volumes to me. And of course, I am looking at the time.
Yes.
Erin, please, would you tell our audience where they can find you, where they can get a hold of their books, where you might find a schedule for where you're traveling to, where do they go?
Sure. So probably the best place where all tributaries go from is my website, Erin, Erin, Pringle, like the potato chip, .com. So erinpringle.com. And from there, you can go to, you know, your nearest bookstore and how to order it for them, or to get it, you know, from the publisher, AWST, Oust Press, and they're out of Austin. You can get it that way. You can get it on Amazon, of course. And if you want to buy it directly,
you can get it from Erin.
I have extra copies because I just do. So I can always just like get you one, worst case scenario, which is not even a bad case. Like that's fine.
Right.
So those are some of the places that you can get it.
Jim has a couple of quotes and, would you?
Can we get it?
We're going to hope that Sam of LA Talk Radio will give us just a little bit of breathing room tonight.
This is closer from the story that Bobby was talking about Valentine's Day. All fathers are kings and giants until their children see them fall. And the next quote, we all can relate to this one way or another. Tuesday. That day was Tuesday. Then Tuesday was a week since it happened, or since he did it, depending on how you thought. Then Tuesday was 2 weeks since, a month since, 2 months. Can you believe it? Then a year, 2 years, 3 years of Tuesdays, 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah. Our special guest tonight has been Erin Pringle. We've been talking about her wonderful book, Unexpected Weather Events. Very briefly, because I am looking at time, Sam. I am looking at time.
Looking at time, Sam. She's looking at it, and it keeps moving.
Our guest next week is award-winning author Ann Parker, and we'll be talking about The Secret in the Wall. And Jim, I think we're going to say,
it's always a great day out west.
Keep reading and keep writing, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.